When you introduce books to children and all the books you show them, none of those titles include a book that has a character that looks like them, there's a clear disconnect, an obvious gap in what that story then means for that child. And there's also a missed opportunity in terms of giving that child a book that shows them how to understand who they are and help them understand what's going on in around them.
That's Nicole Johnson of We Need Diverse Books. And today we're going to be talking about diversity in book publishing and some of the ways that Nicole Johnson and her organization are working with publishers and writers to help improve the situation, especially with regard to children's books. But first, let me welcome you to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. I'm an independent publisher and your host, Peter Goodman of Stonebridge Press. This podcast is brought to you by IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association, at ibpa-online.org. IBPA's mission is to help you become a better publisher through advocacy, education, and tools for success. If you're not a member of IBPA, consider joining and becoming part of the IBPA family. Now let's get started. My guest today, as I mentioned, is Nicole Johnson. She is the executive director of We Need Diverse Books. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Peter. I'm excited to be with you today.
Great. Well, I want to talk to you a bit about the organization We Need Diverse Books, but before that, you have kind of an interesting origin story. Took place at BookCon in 2014. Is that right?
Yeah, that is so. So in 2014, Ellen O and Melinda Lowe sort of started expressing frustration over the lack of diversity and representation on a BookCon panel that year. And they were sort of taken aback that a featured children's panel, all of the panelists were white men, and there was no sort of recognition or in participation by authors of color or other diverse authors. And so, yeah, they took to Twitter, and the hashtag We Need Diverse Books was created. And ever since then, we've been sort of building our set of programs and our infrastructure so that we can advocate for diversity in children's literature and across publishing as a whole.
And so so that was about 6 years ago. Do you see a lot of progress being made?
We see some progress being made, yes, but there's still a lot more work to do. And there are a lot of people, I think, sort of, hearing the call to support this, our mission, and support the work that's been happening for many, many decades around this issue of diversity in publishing.
The interest kind of percolated up into the mainstream media this year, I think partly as a result of all the discussion about systemic racism in American society, the George Floyd protests, et cetera. And there was news about the big five New York publishers kind of diversifying their executive leadership. Do you feel that that is kind of an adequate response, or just kind of a first step, or maybe window dressing? What's your feeling about that?
I think it's a response to the moment, but inside many of those companies are individuals who've been working on diversity from where they sit and really advocating for this issue for many, many years. And as the Lee and Lowe survey reveals, the publishing industry is predominantly white, cisgender, able-bodied folks. Anything that the leadership in particular can do to show their commitment to these issues, I think is important. There is a lot of work to be done. The fact that publishers at the executive level are now sort of taking note, I think that's important. That's an important first step.
So where do you think the real work has to be done? As I kind of look at the publishing industry, there's employees, there's the staff of the publishing company, then there's the sales marketing route, including the booksellers, and then you have the authors. So there's like three different groups. Where do you think the kind of the bottleneck is, so to speak? Where do you think the most important change has to take place?
Yeah, I mean, I would add to that group folks on the consumer side, so educators, librarians, parents, folks that are actually looking for and purchasing diverse books, and young people themselves, right? I would definitely include them.
I guess you might call them the influencers.
Set of stakeholders.
Right.
The influencers. Yeah. Because I mean, in some ways, this it's supply and demand, right?
Uh-huh.
So when you think about publishers and authors and, you know, folks that work in the industry itself, they have a lot of authority and power, right, to make change. And, you know, some of the bottleneck that we've heard is around, you know, hiring practices, the lack of representation within the industry. So folks sort of hire and look for themselves, right? They sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of the lack of recruitment of diverse voices. We also hear that, you know, salaries are a barrier, right? So mm-hmm. folks can't afford to earn the wages. There's just not enough for them to earn a decent wage and to live in New York, right, or to live in big urban cities where it's really the cost of living is pretty high. So those are some of the barriers that we've heard, and just that the process is really slow, right? So if you enter publishing as an intern, it could take many years for you to move up the chain of command and into other roles. And if we sort of with the current rate of change, if we wait for those interns to become, you know, senior executives, we'd be waiting decades.
Right. That was one of the focal points of one of the New York Times news articles. I remember you probably know this better than I do, but the head of one of the big five publishing offices was sort of brought in from outside publishing as opposed to someone who came up in the ranks, and that was the exact same argument. It's like, well, if we can't wait that long. There weren't that enough senior people.
We can't wait that long.
Kind of highlighted the problem to begin with. Why weren't there enough senior people to begin with?
Right. Well, and I think the other piece of it is that retention, right, is an issue. And so, you know, I think what the Lee and Lowe, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Lee and Lowe study, but the Lee and Lowe survey revealed that the greatest diversity in the industry right now is among internships and entry-level positions across the industry. And so, but folks aren't staying, right? They're getting in, but they're not necessarily staying. And that has a lot, I think, to do with the culture and the climate that's created that doesn't create sort of an atmosphere or a set of conditions that would keep people in the work so that they could, you know, be promoted. So yeah, it has to happen at both ends. I think it has to happen at the entry level, but it also has to happen at the executive level where decisions are made, where systems are put in place, where there's a lot more power and authority, both on the creative side and what titles are actually of interest and promoted, but also in the makeup of the industry and the hiring practices and the climate and culture that folks are being asked to enter into. So the work has to happen on both ends.
Do you feel that it's a situation where everyone in every sector really has to be very proactive and self-aware and make conscious choices, sometimes strategic choices, before there's really substantial change?
Yeah, and I think the folks that have been doing it well, they've been working strategically all along, right? And so one of the things that we, you know, advise folks to do is to, one, you know, identify those folks that are already in the work with you. So if you, diverse staff already exist within publishing. There are individuals, whether they are interns or editorial assistants or, you know, senior editors, right, and folks that are already in the industry who've been doing this work for many years. I think of Toni Morrison, right? Like she was inside publishing, you know, creating her work and making change. And so a lot of this advocacy isn't new. You know, there have been folks inside the the system trying to advocate for this and trying to make change. I think, but it's, you know, it's been slow, right? I think if anything, the events of the last 4 months have, or the last several months, have made us all hyper aware that, you know, change is too slow, or change has been too slow, and there might be things that publishers can do, that authors can do, that, you know, parents and educators and librarians, folks who consume books at such a high level and create books at such a with such quality, can start to really take this issue seriously and make, you know, much more significant change much faster, right? So you look at the hiring of Lisa Lucas at FSG, and that, I mean, that is just amazing, right? But it's a long time coming.
And We Need Diverse Books, in addition to being kind of a clearinghouse and someone kind of at the center of all this, you have a bunch of different programs. I was looking at, you have a mentorship program, I guess, that puts young people in with authors and artists. And then you have this very interesting internship program that works in coordination with a number of publishers, where they offer an internship. They offer a young person an internship, and then you step in with kind of a stipend to cover the, I guess, living costs and other, because interns don't get paid, or if they do get paid, they don't get paid very much, and they're generally New York-based jobs that only, I guess, people with means and money were able to take in the past. Have you found that has made a difference, that some of these interns that you've been able to place have stayed in? Because you were saying one of the problems was attrition. They would get the job, but then they couldn't stay. But you've got people now, they're positioned, and once you're in a job, then it's easier to get another job. Do you find that actually happening?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, a couple of things we've learned through the internship program. One is that there are folks out there, once they are made aware of the opportunity, they're definitely interested in working in publishing. So a lot of what we do in promoting the program is to educate folks that, you know, publishing is an option, right? It is possible to enter publishing and have a career. And our grant is a supplement. So we do require our publishing and literary agency partners to provide a living wage to any interns that they hire, that where they expect us to provide a grant to. They also have to provide, you know, a living wage for that person. So our grant is truly supplemental. So on top of whatever wages they're earning through their internship, we provide an additional grant that allows them to cover any other living expenses, which in some ways frees them, right? So in the normal summer, you know, someone has to pay rent in New York or Boston or Chicago or wherever their internship is based, which can be expensive. You know, they have to pay, you know, commuting costs, right? So if they're taking the subway every day, or if they're, you know, having to do Uber or Lyft to work, or what have you, like whatever their living expenses are for that time period, it's totally covered. They don't have to get a second job or a third job. They can really focus on their work and their responsibilities within their internship. And they're also free to network, right? They're free to build relationships with their peers, with other interns. They're free to network and set up introductory interviews with other professionals, either within their firm, within the company where they are interning, or looking outside that company to build relationships with other, you know, publishing houses or other literary agencies. Again, just to really deepen their knowledge and understanding of what opportunities exist. And we provide, you know, in addition to the grant, we provide a set of networking and professional development. Like we schedule networking and professional development sessions for them that they can participate in. So we're not leaving them to, you know, figure out who's who on their own, but we actually facilitate introductions. And this year, we hosted those sessions virtually. So every week or every few weeks, over the course of the entire summer, the interns were, you know, on a conference call, interacting with, you know, professionals in their field, right, and getting to really understand the different roles, and also with alumni. So our program, we've provided 40 plus grants, and about 30 of those folks are still in publishing, right? So we think that there's something to the kind of support and grit that people bring to this work that then allows them to be totally focused on being successful in their internship, but also planning their next step.
It's really fantastic. And if people are interested in that, there's all the information they need on your website. And let me tell you, your website is fantastic. It's wonderfully organized, and there's tons and tons of information there. I'm actually kind of stunned because it actually has your annual reports, so I'm not giving anything away. The most recent one there has your operating budget in 2017 of $267,000, which, considering all that you have going on, and the number of people you have involved, it's just astonishing to me that you can get so much done on such a limited amount of money.
Yeah, well, we've grown since that particular annual report. And this year we're actually going to be releasing a new one. But what I will say is that we have, from the very beginning, WNDB has been driven by volunteers. And we continue to be. So we have 50 plus volunteers that work with us to manage the programs, decide, the criteria, whether it's our Walter Grant Awards or it's the internship program or our WNDB in the classroom. Like we have volunteers that work with us and, commit their time to making sure that our programs can be implemented to quality. And a lot of our growth over the last, I've been with the organization for this is my third year. So a lot of our growth in infrastructure over the last two years has really been to try to support those volunteers and put some paid staff in place to support them and also to ramp up our communications and outreach efforts. So we are definitely a growing organization. And we are excited that, our volunteers, many of them started with us, 5 years ago, and they're still with the organization volunteering. So we're really pleased about that commitment.
I've been in some organizations that rely on volunteers too. And, volunteers are, that's what they are. They're kind of unpaid people. So it really depends on the passion and commitment. It usually comes down to just a couple of people doing all the work, but there's no way that you could possibly do as much as you do with just a few people. So it's really a credit to the organization, the inspiration, the passion, and I guess the mission behind it, that you are able to accomplish so much. I wanted to, a lot of the people listening to this podcast, they're publishers, and many of these publishers are author publishers. They write and publish their own books. And, the issue of diversity presents publishers a lot of challenges, depending on their backgrounds and depending on their own abilities, their experiences, etc. So in the interest of those folks who are listening, first off, we all sort of think we know the answer to this, but how do you define the word diversity, particularly in this context?
So WNDB has a pretty comprehensive definition of diversity, and we recognize and celebrate all diverse experiences, including LGBTQ, Native, people of color, gender diversity, people with disabilities, and ethnic, cultural, and religious diversity as well. And it's always evolving, right? So we receive feedback, a lot of times through our social media, we receive feedback that we need to be more nuanced and we need to pay attention to the intersections of identity and not sort of silo people's experiences. So we hold a pretty comprehensive definition of diversity, and we try to reflect that in the literature and authors and creatives that we promote across our platforms.
How does that play out in the publishing world? Do you sometimes feel, some people criticize that there's some sort of diversity policing going on, that people feel that they can't experiment or stretch outside the boundaries that they've grown up with, or that they live in day to day, that they have to kind of narrow the subject to either to their own ethnicities or their orientations? For example, could a gay person write about straight romance, or vice versa? Do you run into those sorts of discussions?
Definitely. That's a big part of the work. And as an organization, we promote promote and try to emphasize own voices. We want to make sure that authors are able to tell their own story and create characters that growing up they didn't see, right? So that's a lot of what motivates authors, diverse authors, to write. They're like, I didn't see a story that reflected me, and so I want to write that story. And so we raise up, you know, we try to put a lot of focus on own voices, authors, either through our promotions or if folks follow us on social media, they'll notice that trend in our content. But you'll also see it through the Walter Dean Myers Award for Outstanding Children's Literature that we do every year, that award goes to own voices authors. And when you look at the landscape, particularly in, well, across all literature, but particularly in children's literature, even though the diversity of character representation, so the diversity of characters has grown, it's been a slower growth in terms of the number of or the percentage of books written by own voices authors, right? So the representation of Asian, African American, or Black, Latinx authors and various other diversities is really lacking. And so there's a gap there in representation. So we try to emphasize that. In terms of what authors write, I think, you know, if an author should stay true to their work, and if they are, it's really one a situation where any author could find themselves writing outside their identity, right? So, we're paying attention to intersections. So while you may write a book where the main character is Black, there might be elements of my story that aren't necessarily grounded in what I understand to be my own experiences of Blackness, right? So I have to go do the research. I have to go talk to people. I have to have my book reviewed or read by someone of that identity or representation or background, and even historical context, right? So you don't want to get those things wrong, because at the end of the day, it's about representation, but it's also about quality and the rigor that you bring to your work. And that's something that we want to support people to do. We want to support all authors to be able to tell the story that they would like to tell in a way that works not just for them, but for the readers, and doesn't do harm, right? We don't want there to be a title out there that, you know, folks react to and feel like it's done harm. That's something that we want to really be mindful of and again, support people whether it's publishers or authors or, you know, even educators and librarians, right? They want to know how to promote this book. They want to know how to promote a book to all readers, right? So they're not just going to promote a quote unquote Black book to a Black child or a Black family. They're going to promote that book to all children, right? And so we want there to be some understanding and sense that, you know, every book is for every child. And so, you know, the quality of the writing and the rigor and the making sure that the representation doesn't do harm is important for every writer.
Great. And why the focus on children's books?
Well, I think in some ways it goes back to our founding, the folks that came together to really advocate for diversity were children's authors. They were predominantly children's authors. And in some ways, children's books, children's literature, I think is always a bit ahead of adult literature in some ways, because, you know, books are, for a child, it's their first sort of lens into the world around them, right? It's the first chance they have to really understand what's going on in their community or their neighborhood or you know, globally. Like, books really create that sort of introduction.
It's not to suggest that that there's not an issue with adult books.
No, not at all. But I think what you find, though, in children's literature, and maybe this will make it a little clearer, is that in children's literature, you have educators and librarians and parents who are introducing books to children. And when you are, particularly teachers and school librarians, when you introduce books to children and all the books you show them, none of those titles include a book that has a character that looks like them, there's a clear disconnect, right? There's a clear and obvious gap in what that story then means for that child. And there's also a sort of a missed opportunity in terms of giving that child a book that shows them how to understand who they are and help them understand what's going on in around them, right? So there's been a tremendous amount of advocacy and promotion and education around this notion of multicultural education, diversity, and I think a lot of what's happening in children's books, in children's literature and in children's publishing right now is anchored to a lot of that advocacy that's been going on for decades, right? You know, we honor Walter D. Myers because he was an author who was a driving force, like in the New York Times, writing op-eds to say, you know, where are the Black children in children's literature? They're not there. Why aren't they there? Why are my books the books, right? So I think that there is a sort of a history of advocacy in children's literature that may not, that hasn't necessarily existed in adult publishing. But the opportunity now, though, is that the children who are experiencing those, the diversity, sort of the growth in diversity over the last several years, they're going to grow up looking for diverse books, right? And so we've gotten a lot of interest from adult publishers wanting to know, okay, what is this? We want to know more about that. What is that? How does that work?
Right, right.
How did that work in young adult? Like, how did that work in young adult literature? How did that work in middle grade? Like, what does that look like? And how do we transition? And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity for change across the industry and not just in children's. Because if the change stops in children's publishing, one, we won't see significant change across in terms of the diversity of the industry itself, the publishing workforce won't necessarily change if diversity is limited to children's publishing. And two, again, I think we're doing those young people a disservice because they are, you know, the 7-year-old, the 12-year-old, the 15-year-old that's reading diverse books now. And they're like, oh my gosh, I can read about all these different stories and narratives and I can understand and I can compare, right? Because not every narrative is the same. I can make all these comparisons. And then when they get to looking for those same books in adult literature, they're like, wait, what happened?
And in 10 years, in 10 years, they'll be applying for your internship program and getting into the publishing industry themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I think we notice while the mentor, whether it's the mentorship program or the internship program, we get a pretty... it's definitely skewed to a younger generation, but mm-hmm. we've also seen folks who are career changing, right? Who are older and looking to make their, you know, move into publishing, and internships create that opportunity for folks who are, you know, just coming into being an author and promoting their work. They may not, you know, they may have decided, you know, later in life to become an author, but if they are unpublished, they are eligible for the mentorship program. So in some ways, I think we're seeing a lot of age diversity in the mix. More and more, we're seeing that as well.
Well, it's fantastic. And going back to publishing, I noticed that on your website as well, you've got a number of resources for writers. And among the titles or papers that you have available is A Guide to Spotting and Growing Past Stereotypes and How to Prepare to Write a Diverse Book. So any of the author publishers who are listening to this, I certainly advise them to check out your website and take advantage of some of these resources that you provide. Well, it's been fantastic talking to you, and the stuff you're doing is just amazing. I'm just so impressed at how much you are able to squeeze into your organization, how much you do, and how thoughtful the material is. I was looking, for example, at you say, yes, we do go to conferences, but, you know, we go there with a specific purpose in mind, and don't ask us to, you know, sort of give a diversity 101 training. That's not what we're here for. You have a very specific goal in mind, and you seem to approach it very, very methodically. You've given a lot of thought to what you're doing and how to get there. I know it's a long road, but, my gosh, you seem to be making a tremendous amount of progress very quickly. So kudos to you for that.
Yeah, and like I shared, it's a team effort. So our current board members, our volunteers, the the team of folks that are, you know, staff that work at the organization. I think it's our collective effort that really makes this move. And, you know, and there's a host of folks that were with WNDV at the very, very beginning who did sort of move on to other things and in some ways, you know, are still in the work, but not necessarily volunteering directly with us. But we owe them a huge, you know, love. I owe them gratitude and just I've learned so much from the work that the foundation that they set. And, you know, we continue to build on that. And it's been a privilege.
Well, great. Well, I encourage everyone listening to check out the very wonderful, robust, and full of good vibe website at oh my goodness, that's diversebooks.org.
Oh, diversebooks.org.
Yes, diversebooks.org.
That's where you can find us. Yeah.
And we've been talking to Nicole Johnson, who's the executive director of We Need Diverse Books. Thank you very much for taking time to speak with me today, Nicole.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome.
Thanks again to Nicole Johnson of We Need Diverse Books. Now, for more on what WNDB is doing, go to diversebooks.org. And if you're a writer or publisher, be sure to check out all their resources that will help you think about diversity in your own books and how to be sure you're writing what you know. And whether you agree or disagree with anything you've heard on the podcast today, please write to me at Peter Goodman or at IBPA on Twitter. And as always, be sure to check out IBPA and all the membership benefits and resources at ibpa-online.org. I'm Peter Goodman, and as my bosses in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun and stay healthy.